a doctor in the house.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor.
It's time for Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Rashid Batar.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
A doctor, not a mechanic.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
The doctor is in.
Okay, we're going to be starting our first in almost 10 years. I actually have never done a Facebook Live until maybe about 8 months ago. And that's when I started doing the radio show, when I started doing the live radio broadcast. So this is going to be the first time that we are doing a live Facebook that is not the radio show outside of the IADFW. So kind of interesting what we're about to do. And let's see how this all works out. Hi, Kimberly, how are you? Let's see, let me just make sure this is all working right. All right. And I'm going to go live on Instagram. Okay, so this is, as I mentioned, the first time that we are doing a live stream that is not the radio show on Facebook as far as to the public. Now, IADFW, I do that once a week. But as of about 2 weeks ago, I announced that I was not going to be doing the radio show anymore after almost 10 years. And I think it was just time for a little change of pace, although I like doing the radio. And we may go back to it. I don't know. Robert and I have done this for a long time. And I was just getting a lot of questions that people were asking me specifically, as opposed to covering items that were of interest potentially to people that were listening regarding what was being published in the recent media, new recent studies in healthcare, et cetera, et cetera. So that was the reason that I decided to go ahead and break away from this radio aspect and start doing our own broadcast, just to answer the questions as people found that to be more beneficial for what their particular interests were, as opposed to commentary on recent studies. So I've had a couple of people ask me why I stopped, and Robert's fantastic. He's an awesome guy. He's been a good friend for 2 decades, and as I said, we may go back to the radio in the future, but at this juncture, I just felt like it was time for a change. And the plan is going to be that we will answer questions on, we're going to answer questions that are posted at AskDrButar.com. So essentially, this site, AskDrButar.com, was something that we had created years ago, and we only did it, we only had it up for a short period of time, where we were going to do a webinar each week to answer questions. And we figured that we would create this method where people could ask questions. And so we made the site go live, and I think that we had like 600 questions that were posted in the first 2 weeks or something. So we did it only once or twice, and then we kind of went away with it, with the radio and everything else. It was just not enough time. So I'm going to try to focus in on those questions. So in the future, if anybody has any questions, submit them to AskDrButar.com. Go to AskDrButar.com, www.AskDrButar.com, and right there in the front, it'll kind of explain this just a little bit, but you'll see a form that's filled out. And I think it gives you like 11 categories on the form, whether it's political or spiritual or cancer-related, whatever the topics are. I think I'm going to end up having 3 more topics added, but if you think that we need to have different categories of topics, go ahead and submit that too, if you think there should be some other categories. And I'm going to try to answer 3 to 4 questions every week. We'll also have a category set up in there for IADFW, so that if there's specific questions that IADFW members have that I may not answer on the regular broadcast, it'll only be for the IADFW component. So you just indicate if you're an IADFW member or not. Of course, I'm sure some people would maybe indicate they are an IADFW member and not, but that's okay, because if the question's a good question, we'll still address it during the live broadcast for IADFW. And the plan is that from 8 p.m. Eastern till about 9 p.m. Eastern, we will do the regular broadcast. And then from 9 p.m. or, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes after 9, take a couple of minutes, 5-10 minute break. And then we'll do the IADFW. And that will go for an hour to an hour and a half, 2 hours. We've done them sometimes, you know, an hour and 45 minutes, 2 hours. We've done that a couple of times. So anyway, that's the general plan. If anybody has any questions about that, you know, just send them to Facebook, and whoever's monitoring Facebook for me will get those questions to me. We have quite a few questions that have been already submitted, and I didn't really even announce that very efficiently about the AskDrBatar.com, but you guys can pass that on to anybody else. And then those questions, the ones that are, you know, depending on how the videos come out or how the broadcast comes out, it'll all be recorded. And then one of my other, as my youngest son used to call them, daddy's helpers, right? Like Santa's helpers. So I have another helper, one of my staff members, Nabil, and he will go ahead and edit those questions down. So they're a 5, 10, 15 minute long segment that is self-supporting, self-sustaining. It'll be, you know, just one isolated question answer type thing that'll be posted on YouTube. And so that will be how our content on YouTube will continue to increase, because everything that is answered will not be just gone through the live broadcast. We will edit them down and then put them on YouTube so that they're there for other people to refer back to in the future. All right, so without any further ado, I'm really looking forward to the IEDFW broadcast tonight. So if you're already an IEDFW member, definitely tonight is an important night, because we actually launched the Map to Get Ahead programs and the coaching consultations. We started that 4 days ago. We did the first one, and then I did a second one yesterday. And I think, let's see, I'm not 100% sure, but I think, let me see if any of those people are already on. Tiffany is, so we have one person. And then I don't see the other person on here, but maybe she'll be on. Anyway, it was really, it was a culmination of 8 months of preparation and work and, you know, visualizing where this was going to go. And it finally culminated 4 days ago. We did the first one, and Tiffany was the first one, and then the second one. And again, this was just something that I'm just doing a few consultations or a few coaching calls as a coach wearing a coach hat, not a doctor hat, to help create some of the training videos for my coaches. So we already have 3 coaches that are ready to go, and we'll have another half dozen that will be coming online within the next 4 to 6 weeks. And so anyway, it was really exciting to do that. So I'm going to talk about that at the IEDFW. So anyway, without further ado, let's go ahead and get into some of the questions. So there was a question. I'm going to actually, I'm not sure which is the best way of doing this. Maybe I should go with the original questions. Bear with me 1 second. Now, I do want to say, as I'm pulling these questions up, I'm just going to go ahead and download the whole spreadsheet. There's a whole spreadsheet of this. I will say this. If there's a question that's asked and nobody else seems to have an interest in that topic, I probably won't answer it. But if there's a question that's asked by 6 or 7 or 8 different people, then that will be a question that we will spend a lot more time going into and going into details. Because, again, it's based upon how many people are interested in that particular topic, right? Also, not that it's necessarily, first, last name, email, country, subject, and question. And we will start this from 10 till today. So I had not downloaded the whole spreadsheet with all the questions, but we've got a few hundred questions here. And I was going to take the most recent, and then I decided I'm not going to take the most recent. I'm just going to go with the oldest ones that are the most pertinent. To quickly give you guys one other component of this, the categories that are available, again, anybody can go there and see this in Advanced Medicine. If you guys think that there should be some other categories, let me know. but there are 11 categories right now. The categories are cancer, autism, neurodegenerative disease. Categories are cancer, autism, neurodegenerative disease, general toxicity, detoxification, heavy metals, chemicals, nutritional therapies, political, philosophical, and I think that's all it is. So I'm going to add a couple of categories to this. One is the category, one is a category of spiritual. And if you guys have any other categories you think that we should talk about, then please submit those. Another category I was going to have was longevity, or what people call age management. And there was one other component in there, and I can't remember what it was. But anyway, anything that you have a thought process on that you would like as a category that we can put in the subject. And I will try to always hit these different categories. It's important to know, because we may end up going to a theme where we do cancer one week, we do autism the next week, we do neurodegenerative disease the next week, we do general toxicity the next week. So that's the reason I want to have these categories. And you may submit your question on cancer, but it may not be addressed to the week of cancer, which may be 12 weeks out, right? Because we have all these different categories. And of course, we don't have enough good questions in a specific category, then we would just skip them. So having said that, let me go and pull up the spreadsheet that has those questions in there. And what I'm really, really excited about is that there are questions coming in from all over the world. I mean, I was shocked to see some of the questions that were coming in. We had questions coming in from China. I had no idea that I had people from China that were listening to us. But actually, I've had three different questions from three different people from China. So I was... I was a little bit surprised about that. Let's see here. Bear with me 1 second. All right, so this should be the spreadsheet with the questions. All right, that is not the right spreadsheet. There's a lot of different things in there, data that I have no idea what that even means. That's more a Josh thing. So let's go back over here. Philosophical, okay. So here is a... Okay, that was a... So there was a question over here. I'm trying to figure out who asked this question. And the question says, why can you not tell time? Who asked that question? And I look at it, and of course, it's Josh, my IT manager. So that was one of the questions that was submitted. So that is the secret of life. So I'm not going to answer that question, all right? All right, so here are some good questions that were submitted. Function on this. That's the one that, and we will use cells on cells. Alignments. Okay. So sometimes the questions are kind of extensive. What I'm going to try to do is go through a question that is not as detailed, and a question that's going to be able to be answered, you know, relatively efficiently. Let's put it that way. Because some questions can be pretty loaded and they're very long. And any kind of clinical question that's specific to an individual, that I'm going to only do for the IADFW members. I think you guys already know that. So here's a question. I had an ectopic. This question is asked by a lady in the United States, and her first name is Casey. And Casey asks, I had an ectopic pregnancy. Excuse me 1 second here. So So these are some of the things that I need to figure out how to do more efficiently so that I'm not wasting everyone's time while trying to figure out these computer issues. Okay. So Casey's question is, I had an ectopic pregnancy that resulted in the removal of my right tube and they completed a HSG test and said that my left tube is blocked and has adhesions. I was wondering if there is a natural way of unblocking a fallopian tube and removing scar tissue. Okay. Now, scar tissue is a normal response to healing, and there are certain types of tissue that have a greater propensity for developing scar than other tissues. And then there's certain types of skin, certain types of pigmentation in the skin, certain types of responses in healing that will cause a scar to develop in a more dramatic fashion than it would in other people based upon the amount of melanin and such. So for example, people of dark skin, Mediterranean descent, African-American, that type of skin color, that type of melanin content will usually lead to a hypertrophy of the scar. So that's where the keloids will form. The keloids are the very, very hypertrophy type scars. Now that's of course on the external part of the body. They are different tissues will have a different propensity to scar, as I mentioned. So when you're dealing with something like the fallopian tubes, when you're talking about the internal scars are called adhesions. Adhesions are basically fibrous strands of tissue that develop in response to the healing process. And so sometimes you'll have people that have had multiple abdominal surgeries for whatever reason. Let's say a woman had a cesarean section, and then let's say she had a open laparotomy for an exploratory lap where they were trying to figure out what was going on because she had intractable rebound tenderness and pain in her abdomen. And then let's say that, you know, 20 years before that she had blunt trauma and they did an exploratory lap to just find out. In other words, let's say she had multiple histories of abdominal surgery. So more surgeries you've had in the abdomen, you're going to have a greater scar formation or greater adhesions that are going to form. And then what happens is these adhesions form, and they think of them as fibrous tissue. They're like strands. They're almost like ropes, okay, like strings. They're not quite like strings, but they're fibrous bands of tissue. And then they can actually cause loops around the bowel, and they can cause obstruction. They can cause all sorts of different types of problems. So people will have intractable pain. They'll have intermittent pain. They'll have all sorts of other issues going on where they're not having normal bowel functions, or if they are not having normal bowel functions, they'll have a lot of discomfort, a lot of cramping, a lot of bloating, and especially a lot of pain. These are, if the person has a surgical history of or multiple surgeries of their abdomen, then you're going to start thinking abdominal adhesions. And so adhesions can form anywhere in the body. I'm just using the case of abdominal adhesions just because when I was in general surgery, that's what we saw most commonly. But let's say somebody is orthopedic surgeon, right? So if they do a recurrent surgeries in an area of an individual, let's say the person broke their ankle, they have an external fixation device, and they have to go in there and do multiple surgeries over a period of a couple of years, there's going to be more fibrotic tissue. There's going to be more scarring in that area because anytime you cut the body, or anytime there's an injury to the body, the normal response of the body is to try to heal. And scarring, with that, which people sometimes forget, scarring is a way that the body heals. It's a mechanism of trying to make that area that was damaged as strong as it was originally. The problem is once you had an area that's injured, it's typically not as strong as it was originally. So then the fibrous tissues develop and these adhesions develop and the scarring forms in order to make that original injury site as strong. That's what the goal is, to make it as strong as it was originally. And sometimes it's a hyper responsiveness that makes it, maybe that's where the keloids will form and such. And so the entire goal is to make that area that was injured having the same integrity as it did originally prior to the injury. So scarring is a natural healing process that the body goes through to try to prevent further injury. That's to prevent further injury in the future, but also to try to make sure that the integrity of that part of the body comes back to what it was originally. So it's a desired component. But when the scar forms either disfigurement or it forms adhesions in the abdomen, for example, and then causes obstruction because of the fibrous bands causing preventing the peristaltic motion so that as the food goes through the digestive tract and there's a band that's causing a constriction, it won't flow through it. So those are the types of things that are not desired effects, obviously. So we have the scarring, which is a natural healing response, but then there will be untoward effects as a result of that healing that can result in disfigurement or pain or discomfort or other types of issues such as volvulus and intussusception due to these adhesions that are formed that cause the bowel to react in a certain way. So coming back to Casey's question specifically, are they natural? So I thought it was important to at least explain the basics so that how scarring works or how adhesions form and the entire mechanism behind it. So it's a natural healing process. Now, when you've got a fallopian tube, it's not normal for the fallopian tubes to be, per se, injured because that's not a normal place that you get an injury. Fallopian tubes are the part that connects the uterus to the ovaries and allows the eggs to come into the uterus. And, you know, basically, that's where a baby is formed, is in the uterus. But the eggs are in the fallopian tube. Eggs are in the ovaries. And as they're released, they come through the fallopian tubes into the uterus. And of course, it's, you know, the egg is fertilized, and that's where the baby is developed. So when a person has what they call a BTL, bilateral tubal ligation, which is to prevent them from getting pregnant in the future, which is what, that's not Casey's case. She had an ectopic pregnancy, which is basically a pregnancy, but the embryo is not the egg and the sperm, when they come together, form a zygote, and then that forms into the embryo, et cetera, et cetera. And ectopic pregnancy is when the pregnancy, when the egg and the, where the egg is not in the right area. It actually doesn't go all the way through the fallopian tube and can be lodged in the fallopian tube or can be lodged somewhere else. It's not where it's supposed to be. So it's outside of the uterus. And so that can be actually an emergency. Somebody can die from that. So usually when they end up having to go in and have that corrected surgically, they'll usually end up creating, they may remove part of the fallopian tube, or depending on where the egg is, depending on how extensive it is, it all varies depending on what the situation is. But in Casey's case, she had an ectopic pregnancy, so that's why they had to go in there. They had the removal of the right tube. They had it removed because that's obviously where the egg was lodged, and there's a pregnancy there, but of course it will never sustain, and it causes the potential of rupturing the fallopian tube, and a person can bleed out, and they can die from that. So she had this ectopic pregnancy, resulted in the removal of the right tube, and then they completed one of the tests and said that her left tube was blocked and had lesions. And the reason she's probably asking this is the reason she wants the left unblocked is that she would probably like to get pregnant. I'm assuming here that that's what the reason for the question is. So how can one create a situation where the normal adhesions are removed without a surgical intervention? Now, there may be certain ways of doing that. I am not aware of that, but I do know that what we think may be adhesions are actually other components that may be getting in the way. Now, this test that Casey mentioned, I've had patients that have come to me with those tests that showed that they had an adhesion or they had a blocked fallopian tube, and that's why they couldn't get pregnant, and they'd gone through all sorts of different procedures. And we actually, believe it or not, didn't do anything from that perspective. We actually detoxified them, optimized the nutrition, and balanced their hormones. Not by giving them bioidentical hormones and all this other garbage, by basically getting the things out of the body that the body shouldn't have. And heavy metals are a very big part of this, but you basically get rid of the persistent organic pollutants, the heavy metals, basically address the 7 toxicities that I talk about in my book, The 9 Steps to Keep the Doctor Away. You get rid of those 7 toxicities, and by doing so, the body's natural mechanisms come back into play. And every one of the patients that have ever come to me for this reason, we don't deal really with women that can't get pregnant. Our primary area of medicine, cancer, autism, basically people that are immunocompromised, neurodegenerative disease, heart disease, that's basically what we deal with. You know, stroke, Alzheimer's, autism, but predominantly cancer, neurodegenerative disease, and heart disease. Now, having said that, there are not many people that come to us because they can't get pregnant, but I have had over the years probably a dozen and a half to 2 dozen women, family members of patients, previous patients, and or friends that couldn't get pregnant, had gone through all the different things, and then came to us and wanted to see what we could do. And within 6 months to a year, all of them, 100% results, we had women get pregnant. But we didn't do anything for the pregnancy part, right? We got the body optimized, and the body then, once it was optimized, it was easier for the body to get pregnant. That's what it came down to. In fact, I've got a very close friend of mine right now who's bringing his wife down this weekend, in fact, from Canada for that very reason. So the point that I'm making is that I don't know if anything specific that would get rid of adhesions in the fallopian tubes naturally. There may be certain things that you can do. I don't really know what those would be. But more often than not, if there's a blockage and there's no previous history of surgery in that area that caused adhesions, even though a test may show that something is blocked, it's not necessarily a physical block. It may be a non-physical block. For example, it could be an inflammatory cascade that's causing the fallopian tubes to be swollen up, and so that there's a relative obstruction because the lumen is constricted due to the inflammation of the tissue around it. And so that would then show that the test is positive for a blocked fallopian tube. Or there could be other, you know, there's many different things that could be. I don't get really enamored with the details, the fine details as to what's causing the block and this and that. My whole goal is that if it's supposed to happen, I want to get the body optimized. I want to get the mother to be in the best possible health that she can be so that she can optimize her hormones ideally, which will then allow her to get pregnant if she can get physically pregnant. This is a case of the fallopian tubes causing a physical impedance to getting pregnant. And yes, there are scenarios like that, but in my experience so far, I have not experienced that. And again, you know, I've only treated maybe a dozen and a half to two dozen women for this issue, but more than half of them had this test that said that they had a blocked fallopian tube. We didn't do anything with the fallopian tubes. We just optimized them, and within 6 months to a year, they all got pregnant. There's another component to this, mental, emotional, psychological aspect. This is the fifth and seventh toxicities. If an individual has emotional, psychological toxicity or spiritual toxicity, it's very hard for an individual to get pregnant. If there's a lot of stress, anxiety, there's a lot of forgiveness issues, guilt, resentment, you know, whatever other emotions, it's very difficult to get pregnant. Some women, they don't have a problem getting pregnant. It doesn't matter what situation they're in. I've had women, you know, basically in my office crying, saying, you know, I don't understand why my college roommate, you know, his or her sister, you know, who was a drug addict and was in rehab and did all these terrible things to her body and was an alcoholic and, you know, she smokes and she's so toxic and yet she got pregnant and, you know, I've done everything I can and I can't get pregnant. Look, this is a, you know, why this person and not me type of thing, okay? There's an attitude aspect over here too. Remember that everything that is happening in your life, whether you recognize it or not at that moment, it's happening by design. There is a reason for it. And what you may think is a bad situation and why you can't get pregnant, maybe there's a reason because your body is not optimized so that your body can get pregnant. And it's a way that the Creator is preventing an anomaly from occurring, right? I'm getting a little bit off topic here, but it's important to understand that when an individual, for example, a woman who can't get pregnant, isn't getting pregnant despite what she's doing, there's a reason for that. There's a imbalance issue going on. And maybe if the person was to get pregnant, it would end up being a detrimental situation to either the baby or to the mom or both cases. So I'll just tell you from my own experience, after my daughter was born, in my first marriage, after my daughter was born, we tried to have a second child, and my ex-wife tried, and three times she had miscarriages. Three times she had miscarriages. And at 40, she decided that she was just not, you know, she basically came to a resolution that she wasn't going to have another child at the age of 40. And 2 years later, 42, she got pregnant and with my son, Avi, who's now 20. And, but that was after, you know, from 36 to 42, from 36 to 40, for those 4 years, she had three miscarriages trying to have a second child. And then when she finally just gave up on it and stopped thinking about it and stopped focusing on it and stopped, where she was just constantly engaged, creating this stress, this expectation, you know, obsessing over it. As soon as she stopped obsessing over it and stopped questioning, you know, what's wrong with me? Why can't I get pregnant? Blah, blah, blah. As soon as she let it go and resolved, and this took a while to get it to be able to do this. In fact, I tried for a while, for a year, year and a half, and it didn't work. And then finally she came to a resolution on her own that she was 40. She's beyond the window of having a child, and she just basically gave up. And it wasn't until then that she relaxed and it was out of her mind that she was able to get pregnant. So yes, we need to be focused on what we want in life. And where attention goes, energy flows. That's a very true thing. But if your attention is going towards what's wrong with me, why can't I get pregnant? You know, why is everybody else getting pregnant when I'm not? Then your attention is, your energy is being focused on why you're not getting pregnant, which is the universe doesn't hear why is it not happening. It's just hearing, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? And so that's creating a stress. You know, your adrenal glands are kicking out and your hormones are all whacked out. And so you can't get pregnant. As soon as she came to a resolution that she wasn't going to be able to get pregnant, she was too old and she gave up on it and now was no longer worried about it, that's when her body calmed down and she was able to have a baby. And that's, you know, one of the greatest days of my life when my son Abhi was born. I have three phenomenal kids and each one of them was a tremendous gift. But the point being is, you don't want to create so much stress on yourself that you can't get pregnant too. And so when you do these tests will show certain things. Oh, your fallopian tubes are blocked, or your luteinizing hormone and follicle stimulating hormones are whacked out. You need this hormone, you need that hormone, you need this and that. A lot of times it's just calming down and just allowing the body to take over. If you're driving down the road and you see an object in the middle of the road and you look at that object trying to make sure that you avoid hitting that object, you will invariably hit that object. That's one reason they teach you in driver's ed, right? When you see something in the middle of the road or when you're driving a car, look all the way down. You look past that object so you can't go around it. But if you look at that object and you're looking at the object, you're trying to avoid hitting it, you're going to hit it. It happens all the time. So the point here is, again, look down the road. If you want to get pregnant, focus on being healthy. Focus on allowing your body chemistry to adjust itself to the optimum, you know, eating properly, exercising, doing all the things that you know are good for you. Abstaining from vices, you know, reducing your alcohol intake, not smoking, et cetera, do all the stuff that you know that your body needs from a longevity, health, wellness standpoint, and then, believe it or not, you will find yourself a much higher chance of getting pregnant. As far as the fallopian tubes being blocked, whether it's adhesions and you know, maybe different other types of things like that, again, I don't know if anything specific that would break down an adhesion naturally. The only way that I know to deal with an adhesion, it would be surgically to go in there and to what they call ligate and divide the adhesion, or just to, you know, basically to cut it, and it's like cutting a band and it releases the tissue. But you normally don't have that type of situation in the fallopian tube. This is more like in the abdominal region within the actual abdominal cavity where you have these large adhesions because of a lot of surgery and a lot of other things that are going on. I think in this in the fallopian tube, when they say adhesions or blockages, it's usually not that case. It's usually unless there was a previous surgery that caused some of those problems, it's usually something more indirect, like swelling, like inflammation, something that's causing the tubes to shrink down or swell up, rather. So it swells outward and inwards, and then that causes blockage. So when they do these tests to look for the ability for the egg to traverse the fallopian tubes, they see a resistance in the lumen or a reduction in the lumen, and so then they say that there's an adhesion, something blocking it, something constricting it, and it's usually more a systemic issue than a focal, localized issue such as an adhesion. So hopefully, Casey, that answered your question, and probably a long answer, but I think it was important to get that background. I'm going to just pause for a second and see. Okay, and I'm going to try to answer any other questions on here, specifically on Facebook, too, as soon as I'll do two questions, and I'll try to answer the Facebook questions. That's what I'll do. All right. Let's see, next question. Okay. This was a question that was a nutritional question that was asked by somebody here in the United States again. My first name is by Andrea. Okay. And Andrea asked a question. I guess this must have been some time ago. How does a liposomal supplement differ than a regular supplement? Okay. This is really something that I can discuss over a long period of time and go into a lot of details, or I can keep it very, very simple. And I think I'm going to choose to keep this very simple. So, supplements come in all shapes, forms, and such. And there's different types of supplements. Obviously, you have, you know, herbal things, you have vitamins, you have minerals, you have different categories. So liposomal is a liposome is something that is essentially a fat molecule that encompasses or encases the nutrient and allows it to be absorbed into the system easier than it would if it wasn't encapsulated in this lipid layer. So you have cell membranes, and the cell membranes have a what they call the cell membrane. I don't want to get into a lot of cell biology over here, and partially because it's pretty intricate, partially because I'm afraid that I may say something wrong because it's been a long time since I talked about cell biology. But basically, cells have a lipid bilayer. The cell membrane is a lipid bilayer. Okay, lipid meaning fat, bilayer meaning two layers. So there's two layers of fat that encompass the cell membrane, that create the cell membrane. And on the outside part of the cell membrane and on the inside part of the cell membrane, you have what they call hydrophilic or hydrophobic? Okay, so you have two different components. So you have a hydrophilic and a hydrophobic component. The hydrophilic versus the hydrophobic. Hydro meaning water, phobic meaning scared of. So hydrophobic is the lipid bilayer that is resistant to water. Water will not penetrate it. Hydrophilic is that the water will penetrate it without any problem. So the hydrophilic water molecule, the water-based substances will go across it without any problem. But hydrophobic things such as, you know, fat type things, oil type things, they will not, they have a hard time going through it. So the liposome, which is a liposome, think of it as a lipid molecule. The liposome, when it's liposomal delivery, it's basically that mineral, that herb, or that whatever it is, that's encased in this liposome or lipid layer, lipid delivery mechanism, that now allows it to go through, to permeate, to penetrate that hydrophobic layer that prevents things from going through. Because again, it doesn't want certain things to go through that cell membrane. So water can go through it through the hydrophilic component, but the hydrophobic component, it won't. But the lipid bilayer, because it's lipid, you know, it's a lipid bilayer, it's made of a certain composition of fat, just lipids, think of it as lipids. The liposomal encased molecule can now travel through that hydrophobic layer and get into the cell, allow the nutrient to be delivered into the cell. So liposomal delivery mechanisms are superior for certain substances that otherwise could not get into the body because the hydrophobic component will prevent them from being absorbed. Certain things, you don't have to worry about it, right? Certain things, you don't need to have a liposomal component because the body's going to absorb it anyway. Other things, they are issues with getting them absorbed. So liposomal delivery will help to penetrate and permeate that area of the body so that they can actually get to the cells without having to be, without being prevented from being allowed to be entered. So that's what the liposomal supplements are. Unfortunately, there's a lot of hype around liposomal things too, because some things that are advertised as liposomal based to help delivery, they don't need to be liposomal based, right? You in fact wouldn't want them to be liposomal based because they're already hydrophilic in nature. They can they already get absorbed into the body without any problems. But certain things that won't get absorbed into the body, for example, I'll give you a good example: glutathione. Glutathione is glutamine. It's glutamic acid, cysteine, and glycine. It's a three amino acid component that forms glutathione. And glutathione is the most abundant, most ubiquitous antioxidant within the whole body. Glutathione is very, 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 very difficult to absorb orally. It just, the body can't absorb it. So a lot of times people will give the precursors like the glutamic acid, cysteine, glycine. They'll give these different components so the body has a building blocks to create it themselves. Now, intravenously, we can give glutathione, and we do that in our office all the time. But there are companies now with what they call the liposomal glutathione, right? The glutathione is put in this liposomal base, and then theoretically it gets absorbed in the body. Now, my experience is that whether or not that works or not, I've only seen of the 7 or 8 different products that have been marketed that I've seen glutathione, liposomal delivered glutathione, only one of them did seem to work. And even then, it was very inferior compared to when we gave intravenous glutathione. So you could take a month's worth of this liposomal glutathione delivery, and this one IV would, you know, supersede it fivefold. Again, sometimes it's not practical to get an IV, and it's easier to just take that supplement. And maybe, you know, if you get the right company with the right delivery mechanism, then it's going to work. But more often than not, I've seen that a lot of these liposomal delivery mechanisms that people talk about, it's more marketing hype. Sure, it's from a scientific standpoint, it's valid if they're actually able to create that liposomal delivery. But unfortunately, a lot of times companies, I have at least seen with glutathione, it hasn't come to fruition. There's only one company that actually seemed to really work with the liposomal delivery. Vitamin C is another one. A lot of companies will tout their vitamin C as liposomal delivery. And if you can get vitamin C into the cells more efficiently, yeah, that's a good thing. But again, remember, there are only 5 things that penetrate, for example, a cancer cell, right? Cancer is, water can penetrate a normal cell, all right? Water can penetrate a cancer cell. The 5 things that can, cancer is more resistant to normal healthy cells. So there's only 5 things that'll enter a cancer cell. And that's rubidium, cesium, water, sugar, glucose, and vitamin C. Because the receptors for sugar and vitamin C are identical. So those are the only 5 things that will enter a cancer cell. Healthy cells, many other things can absorb a healthy cell. But when they're saying, hey, we have a liposomal delivery vitamin C, well, you know, vitamin C will go into the cells anyway. So when you're talking about vitamin C liposomal delivery, are you getting more in there? Well, maybe theoretically, maybe you are, but you know, the body's only going to be able to absorb so much. Now, one of the components is people say, well, if you take vitamin C in large amounts, you'll get a catharsis, a cathartic type response where you get diarrhea after a certain amount. That body can't handle the vitamin C. But if you take liposomal vitamin C, the same amount, you're not going to have that catharsis. You're not going to have that cathartic movement with the diarrhea because the vitamin C is going to be more absorbed into your body. Well, that may be true. And maybe from a cost standpoint, you know, the liposomal vitamin C may be 4 times as expensive. You know, my thought would be, well, just take the regular vitamin C and just take it in smaller doses instead of taking, you know, 5 grams at one time. Take a gram and a quarter at a time, 4 times a day, and you're going to get the same effect because you're going to get a slow delivery of the vitamin C as opposed to taking 5 grams of liposomal vitamin C just to get absorbed at one time. Again, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, what are the economics of it? What's the practicality of it? Is liposomal delivery like a time release delivery? No, it's not. So now you're getting a hit of 5 grams of vitamin C at one time, and then you're not getting anything else. I'd much rather have a gram and a half, a gram and a quarter going into my body 4 times in a day. But then, of course, from an ease of use standpoint, how often are you going to be able to keep up with taking a supplement, you know, 4 times in a day? So again, there's various pros and cons. But certain things don't need to be liposomally delivered because it's just not necessary. The body's going to absorb it on its own. So that's why I use the vitamin C and the glutathione as an example. The glutathione is very difficult to absorb. Vitamin C is very easy to absorb. But you will see liposomal delivery for both of those type of items. And some of that may be considered marketing help. So hopefully, Andrew, that answered your question on the liposomal delivery component. And it didn't show too much of my ignorance between the lipid bilayer, the hydrophobic, hydrophilic component. But at least that got the general, you got the general idea, all right? Boy, time really flies. It's, I've already been on for almost 45 minutes. That's interesting. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is let's go to Instagram and see if there's any questions on Instagram. And feel free to ask me any questions on Instagram or on Facebook, and I'll try to answer them at the conclusion of doing the couple of questions. A lot of waves. Thank you for all the nice waves. And don't see any questions, though, so that's good. There's no questions there. And let's go back to Facebook. Kimberly said, I felt like an orphan for 2 weeks. Okay, so that's the 2 weeks that we haven't been on live. That's funny, Kimberly. Hi, Dine. Hi, Tiffany. Hi, Danica. Hi, everybody. Amy. Richard, MM, I think I've got you scheduled as one on the coaching calls coming up here. I believe you and Amy both, if I'm not mistaken. Jane, Martha, hello everybody. Soraya. We have somebody here from Barranquilla, Colombia. Awesome. Carla, Jerry, Ruth. Hi, everybody. Okay, so Sarai says, Doctor, I need your help. I have a five-year-old son with autismo, with his autism in Spanish, I guess. I want to know what the protocol to follow. Thanks. Sarai, first, that's a very, very loaded question. Secondly, I can't give you our protocol because it's a very, very detailed thing. It depends on the age of the child and what we find on the workup. It's not something I can just answer in a question like this. Like, it's taken us almost a quarter of a century, our protocol that we have. You can go to a website called autismdefined.net. That's autism, AUTISM, defined, DEFINED, defined.net. Having a problem spelling here. And go through that website. And for anybody that's listening, if you have an interest in autism, or you have a child with autism, or a grandchild with autism, or a neighbor, or a friend, or a relative, or nephew, niece that has autism, go to autismdefined.net. And just go through the website, you look at the real numbers, and then click on the video tab and watch those 12 videos, okay? Some of you may have already seen the very first one, so you can skip over that one, but at least there's 11 really good videos broken down into, they're called Autism Truth, a Truth About Autism videos. So at Autism Defined, watch the Truth About Autism videos, and there's a total of 12, and it'll pretty much answer all your questions. And then if you have, if you, put your email down, you'll actually get access to about, I think it's like 14 different components that other people can't normally access. It's only for people that actually register. There's my autism congressional testimony that I gave before the U.S. Congress in 2004, the entire congressional testimony with references over 1,000 pages. There's a paper that Dr. Bernhoff and I wrote on mercury toxicity that was published in the Townsend newsletter. There's another paper we submitted to the Lancet. There's a number of articles, some videos. There's other resources at the autismdefined.net that you can get if you go ahead and put your email down and register on the website. So that would be a good place for you to start, Soraya. And then once beyond that point, then, you know, if you need more help, more resources, you can go to the YouTube channel at YouTube. Just do a search under my name, Dr. Bitar. You'll find our channel there, and there's a lot of resources there. And actually, those autism videos, some of those videos are there as well. And if you need more help, then you can contact the office. But it's not something simple that I can say, oh, yeah, take this, you know, X, Y, and Z, and you're done. It just doesn't work that way. All right. Chrissy says, watching in Chicago, awesome. We've got people from all over that have actually tuned in the past. Martha wants to know, how do you sign up for the IADFW? The International Association for a Disease-Free World. Well, Martha, thank you for asking a question that's an appealing question for me to answer. And I will actually turn that question over to any of the moderators on the site, and you guys can tell her. Basically, you would just go create your free profile on advancedmedicine.com. You need a invitation code. And one of the moderators can provide you with one of the codes, or one of the people on here that's already an IADFW member can provide you with their invitation code. You can go on there and register. Basically, it's free. And then once you're in there, then you can see how you can become a member of the IADFW. The membership to the IADFW is $99 a year. But for a limited time, we did this for a year and a half that we had basically a lifetime membership for a very, very nominal fee. Now it's for a one-year fee. If you join you pay the first year's fee of $99, you'll end up getting a lifetime membership, so you never have to pay again. Plus, you get the Map to Get Ahead program, which is a $2,468 value that you get free as a bonus. And when you're in advancedmedicine.com, if you created your free account on the dashboard, just look at the IADFW tab on the far left, said join IADFW. You can go through all that material. You can actually see at the end where it goes through and explains all the components of the Map to Get Ahead bundle. You can watch a webinar online that kind of explains all the components in there. And we'll actually be putting all that together in a format that will make it easier to understand too. Map to Get Ahead. something. I need to make a note myself to tell Josh Lee something. And if you just follow that process, then you'll learn how to get to be a member of the IADFW. And many of the moderators that are on here, many of the people on this Facebook stream right now, they are members of the IADFW, so they can help you also to show you how to do that. But the first step is to create your free account that gives you access to the head map and many other things completely for free. Create that free account. You just take some 30 seconds to make it, but you need an invitation code to create that. And once you're in your dashboard at advancedmedicine.com, then from there on, it's self-explanatory. Hi, Louise. Louise was also one of the people that's had her coaching call this week, actually yesterday, I believe it was. Sorry, I said, do you believe in GC math to treat autism? No, sorry, I do not. I don't. GC math is not, it doesn't get rid of toxicity, okay? It may do certain other things, but it does not take care of that component. So many people have claimed many things will help treat their autism, but, you know, if one person says X, Y, and Z created, solved their autism, there's another 50 that have tried the same thing and it didn't do anything for their autism. So is it possible that something can have a unique effect on an individual? Absolutely. But our protocol is focused on one thing and one thing only, and that is removing the second most toxic substance known to man out of the body, which is mercury. And mercury is the only thing that causes denudation of the neurofibrils. It causes the brain to basically disintegrate. So if you watch those videos at autismdefined.net, if you're just looking for a quick answer, you know, you want these kind of answers, you're doing yourself a disservice. Watch those videos. It doesn't cost you any money. Those videos range between 5 to 10 minutes each. Go through those videos, and then you will understand what causes autism. People say, well, we don't know what causes autism. You know, that's, I don't know what I can say. Well, it's BS, okay? It is not, and I'm not talking about belief system, it is not true that we don't know what causes autism. You watch those videos, I will show you in those videos, and after you watch those videos, then let's see how you answer that question. To me, it's very, very clear what causes autism. We've treated over 3,300 children in my clinic alone in the last 23 years, and there's only one thing I've done to focus in on helping these children get better, and that is to remove mercury, and I can show you of those 3,300, you know, more than half of those kids are totally neurotypic today, especially if we got them before the age of 5, 6. Basically, after the age of 7, our success rate drops down. We drop down to, you know, 60-70%. After the age of 9, 10, you know, it drops down quite significantly from there. My oldest child that is totally neurotypic today, that is healthy and functional, the oldest one that we started treating was 15, 16 at the time we started treating him. And I think David's now like in his mid-20s, 25, 26, somewhere in that range. And doing fantastic from California. So, in fact, you'll see some of the webinars. That's another thing I need to do. I need to see if I can find that webinar with David and Abby. Webinar. Put that on Autism Defined. Okay, so it's basically the removal of mercury, and GC Map does not facilitate that. Okay, Luis says, hi, Martha, good advanced message. Okay, perfect. So Luis has already taken over there to help Martha learn how to join the IEDFW. Thank you for that, Luis. Kevin, hey, how are you? MM says, the reason people are calling from all over the world is because you know your stuff and people are waking up to what is happening in this world. MM, I think your words are, at least the people are waking up part. I mean, that's very true. I'd like to know that I like to feel that I know my stuff. I feel like that chimpanzee in that poster that is reading a book and saying, the more I learn, the more I realize I don't know. And that's how I feel sometimes. I feel today I know less than 20 years ago when I thought, or 30 years ago when I thought I knew everything. So there's an old saying, I can't believe how stupid my father was when I was 19 and how smart my father became by the time I turned 21. Of course, you know, being facetious, but that as we get older, within that 2-year time frame from 19 to 21, we realize, you know, we thought our dad didn't know anything, and then we realize how much our father really knows and how little we really know. So the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. So it's a constant process of learning. But I appreciate the words, MM. And with your help and with the help of the other people that are in the IADFW, God willing, we are going to make a difference on this planet by making the change the world's waiting for. And we're going to make that change the world's waiting for one person at a time, starting with you. And that's what our slogan is. That's what the mission behind IADFW is. I'm actually going to ask Luis, you, and Tiffany, you tonight on IADFW. I'm going to probably have you guys, in general terms, just kind of share what you thought about what we went through with the coaching call. And anyway, I had a really good time with both those calls. And of course, I'm not going to be doing coaching calls with, you know, as once we've got all our coaches in line and we've got the coach trainers on par and they're good to go, then they'll be basically working with the coaches. My goal is to develop a relationship with all these coaches and help the coaches get the word out to everybody that's joined the Map to Get Ahead program so we can reach the masses. So anyway, we have three coaches that are ready to go, and then we have two people that are wanting to be coaches that are already in the pipeline, and then probably a couple dozen others that are really excited about it. So if you have not received an email from me and you had voiced the desire to become a coach, but you didn't receive anything from me, you know, please send a message again. I will put that down in the IADFW. If you're not a member of the IADFW, it doesn't really matter because you wouldn't be able to get involved with that anyway until you become an IADFW member. But somebody remind me when we're on the IADFW live broadcast, and that way I can give you guys an email to send if you have not heard from me and you had voiced a desire to be a head map coach, a map to get a head coach. All right, so just remind me of that. Thank you, Luis, for reaching out to Martha. Kathy says, is there a successful treatment for eczema besides steroid cream? Kathy, awesome question, really awesome question. Do me a favor and submit that question at askdrbutar.com, because I would love to answer that question. Unfortunately, I need to be ending the broadcast because we've been on for right about an hour. You know what? Let me answer this question because it's such a good question. And I'm going to give you a short version of it, and then there's a much longer version. But when somebody has eczema, I don't care what kind of eczema it is. I don't care where it is in the body. It is first and foremost important for you to address your gut. So eczema, I used to have extremely bad eczema, okay? It's our diet. It's our gastrointestinal dysbiosis, the imbalance in the gastrointestinal system that leads to skin problems like eczema, okay, psoriasis, many other things like this. If you can get a handle on your gut and get that straightened out, you will see so many other changes, including an improvement in joint issues, including an improvement in eczema, including resolution of psoriasis, et cetera, et cetera. So it's always a gut issue. Start with the gut. And if you go to advancedmedicine.com and you create your free account there with the invitation code that one of the IADFW members can give you, you will have access to the HeadMap. A HeadMap stands for Advanced Health Evaluation and Assessment for Detoxification Medical Assessment Program. If you get into and do the HeadMap, you will then find out which organs of detoxification are impaired, and you will see whether or not your gut you have an issue with your gut. And in fact, the gut is the most extensive component of the HeadMap. There's four phases that we look at, and you will know whether or not there's an imbalance with your gut. If you can get that straightened out and address the gut, get that balanced, you will see an improvement in psoriasis and eczema and, you know, all sorts of other issues. So that was a quick and short version. Good question, though. Sam, hi, how are you? Aliana, hello. Susan said, love this time better. Yeah, that's another reason that I decided to stop doing the radio, because a lot of people were having a problem. You know, the problem is that we have people from all over the world. So even though it's 8 p.m. on the East Coast, it's still 5 p.m. on the West Coast. And, you know, it's 2 o'clock in Hawaii. And so it's always going to be disruptive in some time zone. But this does end up being I'm used to doing this time frame. So we just came back to this phase. And again, everything's going to be recorded and available for anybody to watch afterwards. So just being on live is the only issue. Richard, that must be your invitation code. Richard, thank you for helping somebody to get access to the Advanced Medicine website. Andrea also did the same thing. Thank you, Tiffany. That's the Autism Defined website. Thank you. Good. Martha's already in. I'm sitting here behind. I'm answering the questions. So Martha's already in. That's excellent, Martha. Susan says, do you remove silver fillings before treatment? Silver fillings are actually amalgam, mercury amalgam, 49.5% by weight of mercury. No, they do not need to be removed as long as you are planning on having them removed within the next 6 months. If you are not planning on having them removed and you go ahead and start getting mercury removed out of your body, the problem is you're just getting a temporary fix because those fillings, what you're calling silver fillings, those amalgam fillings are outgassing at 5 to 9 nanograms per deciliter per tooth per day. So that's an issue that if they're not going to be taken out, when you're doing IV treatments removing mercury, yes, it's going to end up coming out faster than it's outgassing. So you know you have the next 6 months to get the fillings out, not an issue. But if you haven't made plans to get the fillings removed, then remember, you may be getting rid of the mercury out of the body, but it's outgassing and accumulating in your body from the dental amalgams in your mouth. So there's 5 to 9 nanograms per deciliter per tooth per day of outgassing. So if you have, you know, 10 amalgams in your mouth, then you know you got 50 to 90 micrograms, nanograms, of mercury outgassing and absorbing into your body on a daily basis. So Instagram, let me just quickly look at Instagram because I think Instagram's about, it's only limits you to an hour and Instagram's about to end here. So I just want to make sure there's no questions on Instagram. A lot of people coming on Instagram, but no questions, so that's good. And guys, remember, askdrbuttar.com. You can submit your questions there. Okay. Coming back to Facebook. Jennifer said, do you do any research into ALS? Yes, we have. We have looked at ALS. ALS is a challenge, but yes, we have done. We haven't done any clinical. Well, we've done some outcome-based research in ALS, yes. Mercury in uterine mom has amount. Mercury in uterine if mom has amalgams. Susan, I think you're asking, is mercury in the uterus if the mom has amalgams? Yes. If you have amalgams, if a woman has amalgams, it's throughout the system. And whether it's in the uterus or not is irrelevant because when the baby is developing, the mother's body becomes a nutrient shunt to supply all the nutrient and all the beneficial components to the fetus because that's what the mother's primary function becomes as carrying a fetus, is to provide nutrients and resources to the fetus. But it's not selective in what goes to the fetus. So everything good in your body is going to go to the fetus. Everything bad in your body is going to go to the fetus. So that's why it's so important for the mother to first be detoxified before she gets pregnant. So to me, if a woman is planning on getting pregnant, there are certain things that she should do. She should go through a proper detoxification, make sure the mercury levels are not high. You know, nutritionally, she needs to get buffed up, if you will. Women that exercise carry the pregnancy much better and actually give birth a lot easier. So there's a whole bunch of things that a woman can do. In fact, I've even thought about putting a program together for women that are wanting to become moms to have them a six-month program to get them ready for motherhood, to be able to help their babies have the leading advantage of, you know, basically setting them up for success. In fact, I'm going to break that down. New mom program. We might even put that together and have that available for members of the IEDFW so that people in fact, that would be a good video to put together what new moms can do to make sure that they have the healthiest baby possible and things that they can start doing 6 months before they're planning on getting pregnant. So that is a good question. Tori said, ideas for ringworm. Ringworm is relatively easy to deal with. You can get an over-the-counter antifungal. Just make sure it doesn't have any steroid in it. And over-the-counter antifungals work really well. There may be some homeopathics that work well. I can't tell you specifically which ones, but over-the-counter antifungals are actually, you know, if it's over-the-counter, and it's a topical, it's an antifungal, and it has no steroid, you're good to go. It's not going to hurt you at all, and it usually only takes 2 or 3 treatments to get rid of it. But I would still use it. Even if 2 weeks or 2 days or 3 days you see the ring disappear, still continue treating it for about 5 days because it can't come back, all right? Andrea said, I cannot wait for the coaching call with you tomorrow evening. Well, Andrea, I didn't know whether I knew I had another coaching call. In fact, I've got a coaching call every day for the rest of this week. So I am looking forward to two as well. I'll tell you that the two that I've already had with Louise and with Tiffany were fantastic. I really enjoyed them. I had a good time. Holly says, how do you get rid of keratosis? Well, it depends on what, you know, what type of keratosis it is. And so there's many different types of keratosis. That's a generic type question. There are a number of ways. Detoxification is the first place to start. So pretty much anything anybody asks me, I would tell you start at the head map and start looking at it. Many of these diagnoses are what doctors label because they don't know where it's coming from. And most of these diagnoses are just nothing more than descriptive terms. So do the head map and see what the issue is in your organs of detoxification. Start addressing those. And once those are addressed and the person starts getting healthy, you'll see those things start to disappear, whatever your issue is. More often than not, I'd say 85 to 90% of the time, just by addressing the organs of detoxification and getting your head map score better by following the protocols as we've developed them. You don't have to do that, obviously. You have access to the head map. You can do whatever you want to do. But for people that are participating in the next step and starting to utilize the protocols as defined by the head map, what you need, 85 to 90% of the time, whatever the medical conditions are, start to get better. So, again, I would go to advancedmedicine.com, create your free account, and do the head map and see what, you know, where your scores are and what basically they're indicating. Melissa said, thank you for returning to this time. Absolutely, Melissa. Holly wants to know, what is the website? I think that's Advanced Medicine you're talking about. So it's advancedmedicine.com. Heather said, have you looked at Advanced TRS Zeolite for heavy metal detox? Yes, Heather, I've looked at all sorts of different zeolites. I don't know about the Advanced TRS, but a zeolite is a zeolite. And, you know, they bind to metals. There's no doubt about that, but it's not the same as a chelator. Okay, if it was, then we would have thousands and tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of children that have autism that wouldn't have an issue with it. But the problem is that zeolite can get maybe to the superficial, free-flowing type metals, but things that are bound to the terminal end of the protein structure, the mercury that's bound to the subhydro groups of the terminal end of the protein structure, and especially the things that are bound to the internal sulfhydro groups in protein structure, they can't be accessed by zeolites or any of those things. In fact, they're even difficult to be accessed by the chelators, but through a process of homeostasis and the higher grading to lower grading shunts, you know, then you can start creating a decrease in the amount of mercury. But even with the chelators, like British analeucide is one of the best chelators out there, but it'll get to the internal, the mercury that's bound to the internal sulfhydro groups within the protein structure. The problem is a 20% mortality. So 1 out of 5 people will die from the British analeucide because it's causing, as it's pulling the mercury off the sulfhydro group within the protein structure, it's causing a disruption of that sulfhydro group, which then causes the sulfhydro group to break. And when it breaks, it causes a dehiscence or a morphological destruction of the integrity of the protein structure. So the protein is no longer the protein because, remember, proteins are, it's amino acids that form peptides, that form polypeptides, that form proteins. These are long, long chains of amino acids, essentially. And then they're convoluted up into these balls of yarn-looking weird things, and they're held together in that structure by these sulfhydro groups, and that's what allows a protein to be a protein. If you denature that sulfhydro group, or you break that bond, and you unravel that protein structure, it's no longer a protein structure, it's just a long sequence of amino acids, because the morphological structure of the protein has now been destroyed. It's no longer functional as a protein. So when you go into the sulfhydro groups, and like a British analeucide goes into the protein structure, into this yarn-looking protein structure, deep into it, and binds to the mercury, pulls that mercury off that sulfhydro group, it causes a denaturing of the sulfhydro bond, too, which causes that protein structure, that morphological structure to go, you know, kind of break it. Another one breaks and breaks and breaks, and then finally this unravels. And 1 out of 5 people will die because of that continuation of the breakdown. So it's basically causes denaturing of protein. But, you know, but many of the chelators, they're very effective. I mean, zeolite is great to bind to stuff that you may be exposed to within the last 12 hours, 24 hours. I have not found it to be effective at pulling out metals out of a person. Remember, cilantro is a fantastic natural concentrator of mercury. People call it a chelator. It's not a chelator, it's a concentrator. But here's the thing. When people take cilantro substances, you know, and they think that they get this false sense of security. I love cilantro in my food, but I'm not doing it to try to pull mercury out. Why? Because the natural environment that mercury, that the cilantro is found in the soil, it's finding, mercury is everywhere. So it's finding that mercury, it's concentrating it. So if you take cilantro supplements and you get them analyzed, you'll see they're very, very high in mercury because they're a natural concentrator of mercury. So you're actually taking this mercury into your body thinking that you're going to have something that's going to bind to the mercury, but you're actually giving the body more mercury by taking the cilantro. And then through the process of diffusion, you know, osmosis, it's going to be a high concentration to a low concentration. The mercury is going to dispel into the body, and you're going to actually get a net influx of mercury into the body. And zeolites are the same way. They're natural substances that are found in the environment that concentrate mercury. But now you've been thinking, oh, well, it can actually concentrate mercury. So if I take it in my body, I'm going to pull the mercury out. Wrong answer. They're already concentrated with mercury. Unless the zeolites have been, you know, unless the cilantro has been grown in a laboratory where it's hydroponically grown and there's no mercury in the environment, so it's pure cilantro with absolutely no natural exposure to heavy metals, so it hasn't ever concentrated anything. Then if you take it into your body, then there's theoretically a possibility that it's going to bind to the mercury and pull it out. But again, it's a concentrate. It's not a chelator. A chelator, by definition, whatever goes in the body comes out the same way. It's inert. Cilantro has nutrient value, so it's going to break down. There's going to be certain components go a different way. So it's not a chelator by definition. It's a concentrator, which is different. All right. So I'll get off that bandwagon, but, you know, people talk about zeolites all the time. Guys, if zeolites was that great, then there would be no issue with autism. And I would be a very happy camper because I wouldn't have to worry about where we're going to get our next DMPS from to treat our children with, because, you know, we're having a hard time getting DMPS or whatever the case may be. So, yes, I'm asked this question probably once every 6 months by somebody. But, you know, it's not what everybody thinks it is. And if you think it is, then great, use it. And prove me wrong, and that's great. I'm going to be happy. I'll be the second happiest person if zeolites work for you. So use it, and if you think it, you know, works, that's fantastic. I just have not seen it work in the patients that come to us. And we've got patients from 91 countries now that with all different, you know, nationalities, creeds, ethnicities. So we've got a very, very varied human population of all races and all creeds and of all ethnicities transversing the geographical boundaries. And so we just have not found it to be effective in any specific group. I mean, it should be universally effective, and we have not found anything to be universally effective as the chelators that have to be intravenously or transdermally applied. Okay, hopefully that answers your question. Luis says you love it. Luis, I think you're talking about the coaching call. I appreciate that. Jay Leslie says, are you currently in Mooresville? We have a clinic in Mooresville, yes. Heather says, UTI seems to be a problem in women. Is this a gut issue or metal? Urinary tract infections are more, they're neither one of those two issues. Of course, if you have a good gut balance and you don't have metals, so good gut is going to give you better immunity, and no metals is going to prevent you from being immunocompromised. So then, yes, theoretically, you're going to have a much beefier and stronger immune system, which will then make you less prone to a urinary tract infection. But gut issues and heavy metal issues do not affect the urinary tract directly and don't prevent urinary tract infections directly. But as I said, if you don't have any metals, that means your immune system is revving up higher. And if you have an optimum gut, that means your immune system is even that much better. And so if your immune system is really, really strong and beefed up, you're going to have a less chance of getting any type of infection. Not just urinary tract infections, but any type of infection. Tori said, thank you so much. You're most welcome, Tori. Debbie said, what do you do for scalp fungus? Again, Debbie, if a person has any type of fungus issue, like the tinea corpus, I mean, the first thing is people that get fungal infections, they're immunocompromised, okay? That's the third toxicity. In the seven toxicity philosophy, that's the third toxicity. So when you're talking about the ringworm or you talk about scalp fungus, you talk about any other type of infection, watch the Facts on Toxicity videos. If you go into advancedmedicine.com, create your free account, on the left-hand side under Education, look at the tab that says Facts on Toxicity. There's about 9 videos there, all right? This is all free. Just go watch those videos. And in those videos, it talks about the seven toxicities. So seven toxicities is what allows the immune system to compromise the immune system. So the first toxicity, heavy metals, will suppress the immune system. The second toxicity, persistent organic pollutants, that will suppress the immune system. So if you have a suppression of the immune system from the heavy metals and or the persistent organic pollutants, usually both of them together. Then the third toxicity, which is the opportunistics, that's where the parasites, the fungus, the yeast, the bacteria, the viruses, the spirochetes, all that stuff comes into play. So if somebody has scalp fungus, or they have, you know, tinea corpus, or, you know, tinea pedis, or foot, jock itch, you know, which is tinea corpus, or you have the foot fungus, you know, the that's tinea pedis, or ringworm, or any of these other low chronic, low grade fungal infections, that means your immune system is compromised. And it's usually compromised because of either one, the heavy metals, or two, the persistent organic pollutants, or somebody who gets recurrent bronchitis, or recurrent ear infections, or recurrent pharyngitis, or whatever, recurrent infections. That's all those infections under the third toxicity, and I call those the opportunistics. So the reason I call them opportunistics is the only way you can actually get any of these infections is if the offending pathogen, in this case, let's say the scalp fungus, has an opportunity set up house. Why are you having scalp fungus, but your significant other doesn't have a problem with it, and your kids don't have a problem with it, or your neighbor doesn't, or your friends? Well, it's because your immune system is susceptible. It's susceptible because of either heavy metals or persistent organic pollutants, or maybe the fourth toxicity, the energetics, or whatever else. You know, those seven toxicities are important to address, because once you address those seven toxicities, your immune system comes back up online, and then many of these things, like the opportunistic type infections, bacteria, viruses, spirochetes, mycoplasma, yeast, fungus, etc., they will not be able to have the opportunity anymore to set up house, because they need an opportunity. Your system won't be susceptible to these opportunistics. So that's why I call the third category opportunistics. So your scalp fungus is an opportunistic infection. If you address your toxicity issue and you get your immune system back up to normal, you won't have to worry about that. And of course, you can do certain antifungals over the counter without steroids. You can get an antifungal over the counter as a scalp shampoo and use that. That's fine to give you some temporary relief. But until you address the toxicity issue and allow your immune system to come back online, you will have recurrent issues with this. Okay. All right. I think if there's only one more question. Best way to get rid of facial acne. Karen said, again, Karen, same thing. Best way, deal with the gut. Get the gut straight and your acne will disappear. There's, of course, only one caveat to that. That's people that are going through the adolescent, the burst of hormones. That's just a normal phase that lasts a year, 2 years. But even that, if the gut's optimized and proper nutrition, you're not going to have to worry about it. Skin is a manifestation of your internal environment. So if you're in your mid-20s, late 20s, 30s, and you're having a problem with acne, it's a gut issue. Get your gut straight, and you know, pimple here or there, that's not a big deal. But if you have a lot of acne, it's a gut issue. Get your gut straight, get your liver straight, and you're not going to have to worry about that. Again, acne, the skin, scalp fungus, you know, these are all opportunistic type things. The acne is just a normal response to the skin getting infected. But again, if the gut's straight, your skin's healthier, and you don't have to worry about that issue. I've had people with some really, really, really bad acne, like cystic acne, and we dealt with them by helping their gut get their gut balance, and it was able to resolve their issues. You know, it took a few months to get it done, but once they got it done, they didn't have the problems anymore with their cystic acne. All right, guys, I will say good night to everyone. Okay, is rosacea related to gut issues? Yes. Rosacea also has a component of the gastrointestinal system, anything to do with the skin, that's the first place I start. Hormones and skin, I start with the gut. Get the gut straight, and you know, we've got a very, very elaborate gut detoxification formula. There are many companies that have many different things. Ours is based upon, we have so many different protocols, but it all depends on how the head map scores come in, based upon how you answer it. And that tells me which gut formula to put you on, or which combination of gut formulas to put you on to get the optimum result. So that's why the head map is so important for my purposes, okay? And Louise and Tiffany, who went through the detailed map to get ahead consultation, when we went through the map to get ahead, you guys saw how much information is actually contained in it. People don't realize all that information in that one-page report, but it's a tremendous amount of information. All right, guys, so have a great night. Until next week, I will see you next Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern, and we will be doing our live broadcast then. Until then, I hope you all have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. And for the IADFW members, give me about 10 minutes. I'm just going to get something to drink, take a bathroom break, and then I will be back on the IADFW live broadcast. All right? Very excited for the IADFW tonight. Got a lot of things to cover. All right, guys, have a great night. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in with us today. For more information and links on other valuable resources, please visit advancedmedicine.com and medicalrewind.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our weekly newsletter, The Howe Report. And join Dr. Rasha Patar for his Facebook Live broadcast every Monday evening and for hundreds of hours of Advanced Medicine podcasts, which are broadcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and are available in the podcast section of medicalrewind.com. You can find Dr. Patar on Facebook by searching for Dr. Rashid A. Patar, and on Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram by using Dr. Patar. Don't forget to head over to advancedmedicine.com and register for your free account, gain access to the HeadMap assessment, and many other free resources available at advancedmedicine.com. Use Dr. Patar's invitation code 11 and join today. Thank you for your support and for being a part of making the change the world is waiting for.